According to United Nations estimates, 40 million people are infected with HIV/AIDS worldwide. Of these, 26 million live in Africa. 14 million children are orphaned, their young mothers having died, for the most part, without access to treatment. Most people living with HIV and AIDS are people in the prime of their lives, and their potential to contribute to their communities has been destroyed. Their deaths represent an incomparable loss. We go now to an interview with two scholars from the University of Namibia who are engaged in HIV/AIDS education and research. Dr. Scholastica Ipinge is a lecturer in community health and public health. Dr. Barnabas Otala is in the Faculty of Education and the chairperson of the university's HIV/AIDS Task Force. According to Dr. Otala, the underlying cause of the devastating impact of HIV/AIDS in Africa is poverty. However, despite many ambitious pronouncements, there's little evidence of international commitment to alleviating poverty.
A lot of the problems have to be explained through by poverty. And only recently in July, we had the United Nations talking about the Millennium Development Goals and how they have to be achieved by 2015. We have also had this discussion about EFA, Education for All. And what we said about that is, it's all right to make all these goals, but if you don't support those people who need that kind of support for their areas, you will not achieve those goals by the stipulated time. So in effect, especially in relation to EFA, Education for All, we know of many African countries which, given the present lack of development, are not coming anywhere near the achievement of those goals. Similarly, with the Millennium Development Goals, which relate to HIV/AIDS, which relate to so many of those eight, an international partnership, we see a lot of a rise in the disease, but there is no partnership which is supposed to provide the support that is necessary to achieve the goals.
In fact, the fiscal policies enforced on third world countries by international institutions like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund have contributed to poverty and underdevelopment. Dr. Otala and Dr. Ipinge explain how, focusing especially on the relationship between underfunding of education and declining health care.
In my travels in a number of African countries, there is a facetious statement. You say, "Hello, how are you?" They say, "I'm all right, but the only problem is I'm suffering from SAP. SAP is the acronym for Structural Adjustment Program, a program which was made and with the World Bank's now admission, without full consultation and agreement of all stakeholders. We were at a meeting in Mauritius about 4 years ago of the Association of African Universities. And a World Bank official said, "Yes, I think we made errors in insisting on structural adjustment without full consultation, without necessary consult with all the stakeholders." One specific example was the question of saying, we don't need to support universities and tertiary institutions. What we need to support is basic education and possibly secondary education. But now it is realized that you can't do that without having support for universities and higher education, because they are the ones that feed back in here. So it means you have to support a cross-section of education from early childhood right through to higher education. So a basic element or weakness of that those structural adjustments is that they implemented them, they conceived them without full consultation and agreement of the people who are going to be affected. And it has had its negative impact right across.
And in fact, they should have done feasibility studies of issues they want to implement. Mm-hmm. Are they feasible, given actually the economical structure in the countries where they are actually going to apply such? In fact, they prescribe how health systems have to be implemented in countries. Just because we are poor, and you know, beggars cannot choose. It ended up actually in some countries actually that sometimes, because they cannot actually pay back whatever they have given, some of the health systems have collapsed. Many people did not have access to health facilities, and even the health workers themselves were affected. And then if people are not having access to health facilities, obviously they are going to resort to traditional medicine. And how much education did we give to these people to handle especially the issue of HIV? Some of those issues needed actually to be, you know, studied before you implement any strategic plan.
In addition, in terms of health, and this goes back to the question of laying less emphasis on tertiary education. If you do that, then you don't have the manpower that deals with health issues. And then of the small manpower that you have, you now have cases of so-called brain drain, because they are now going away to other places. Because if you had your own structure, if you had planned properly, there would have been a way to discuss on how to retain those people. So directly, in terms of financing, it has affected health issues.
One country where the health system has suffered dramatically is Zimbabwe. The brain drain is one important factor.
In Zimbabwe itself, there is actually now, I don't know, the quality of care is not there. Basic facilities, basic equipment is not there. Health workers are running out. And those who are remaining, they are actually stretched to the limit. And they are actually burnt out. And I don't believe that quality care is being provided. And that is why actually that Zimbabwe health system, they are now actually to introduce what they term primary care providers, which is actually a lower category to provide the care which have been provided by well-trained, experienced health workers. That goes across actually between doctors and nurses. And that's not good enough. If the world is serious actually about Africa, they have to provide resources. They have to put in measures about the brain drain. Even I regard brain drain as a moral issue, it's an ethical issue. If people are actually going to tap from the little resources developing country have to fight or to men, you know, to provide manpower to their health system, I don't know. There must be some remittances, actually, some rewarding to origin of health, original countries where their health workers actually are being poached. Yeah. By industrial countries.
And periodically they then come there, and what do? They institute punitive measures in terms of the World Bank has reviewed the situation, we're going to cut off aid to Zimbabwe. Now, who is suffering? It's not the people you think you are punishing, it's the ordinary person who is actually suffering from that punitive measure that you have made.
The World Bank and IMF represent the interests of the United States, which holds an effective veto over all so-called development plans. Dr. Otala reflects on U.S. health policy, both domestically and internationally.
The U.S., through its functions, I think they usually channel their help through USAID and so on and other bilateral agencies direct. But it claims that they are doing good to the people. But in practice, if you see how the function operates, it's not really the case. We recently heard of various instances where monies have been moved from one vote, for instance, to support Africa to another place. The example of Iraq during the war is a clear one, where monies were voted this way and moved this way. Incidences in New Orleans now, for us, those are real incidences. We were told that there had been plans to protect the place and monies had been moved. But we hear from what I read and we hear from other stories that those monies were moved elsewhere. And what happened? Boom. And I think even the administration there has accepted that if they had only paid attention. And people of Black origin cannot afford not to make connections. You know, even in the case of HIV, we are saying, you know, we regret what happened in tsunami. The support came almost instinctively, and the people who died in that, almost in the tsunami, which is regrettable, are about the number of people that die from HIV/AIDS every day in Africa. Why not that support?
We're hearing Drs. Scholastica Ipinge and Barnabas Otala of the University of Namibia speaking about HIV/AIDS in Africa. The African continent has been a battleground in 11 wars in recent times. Dr. Ipinge describes the impact of war on healthcare and development.
When you have war, you have diseases, you have social destruction, and you cannot actually produce, you cannot function as you are supposed to do. So the whole cycle is so vicious. Because if you don't, you cannot work on your farm to produce food. Obviously, you develop malnutrition. Obviously, then you can have food insecurity. You will become vulnerable to diseases. There's no education at all. So it's so sad that, I mean, intelligent, well-to-do people can really do that. And they claim they're Christians.
That's as if that's not enough. What about the maimed children? What about the lost legs? With all those bombs that I've left by,
how are they going to assist?
You cannot plant there. Why? The moment you put a hole there, the thing blows up. If you look at Angola, the number of children and adults whose hands and legs have been blown off, it is really pitiable. Watch what is happening in Darfur, how many children have died, and so on. You can extend it to other countries in Africa, Somalia, and so on. Every place, it doesn't have to be the cause. Every place that suffers that concept will have the same negative, deleterious effects.
In Angola, one of Namibia's neighbors, Jonas Savimbi waged guerrilla war against the socialist government for 30 years with the full backing of the United States.
The health system was actually broken down in Angola. And we have experiences, actually. Most of our hospitals on the borderline is full of Angolans. That's where actually they get there. And then our resources are not really that much and is stretched to the limit, but we cannot turn the Angolans away. They have helped Namibia actually to gain their independence so much. So it's resources we are talking about. Instead of the war, why can't we direct the resources for more beneficial activities, to retain health, to promote health, to sustain health, and actually to facilitate quality of life.
The West has been implicated not only in Angola, but in political strife throughout the continent.
Certainly for evidence, we usually rely on that information which is released 50 years after, according to their regulation, as in Britain. So from that evidence, you can say all the way back to Mobutu, all the way. And so you can actually say that what those people also didn't realize is if you fall out of favor or if you are not fulfilling their needs, tomorrow you'll be finished.
And I mean, I'm sorry to say that the U.S. have selective morality, and I don't think they are serious in what they are doing. They are actually protecting their own interests rather than actually putting our interests on their priority list. It's so ironic. It's really so ironic. These well-to-do countries, they instigate destruction. But then they turn around. We want to assist you to rebuild. You know, that's hypocrisy.
Despite the challenges, African professionals continue to seek solutions to the health crisis and to create innovative programs to preserve and enhance their social services. In Namibia, the prevalence of HIV infection has dropped from 22.5% to 19.5%, although it's not yet clear whether this will be a permanent downward trend. Dr. Ipinge describes the context for HIV/AIDS work in her country.
The situation is quite going well in terms of governance. We have a democratic government. We have a constitution which is worldwide actually alluded at. However, with the HIV issue, resources are becoming stretched. We have actually a tendency of most of the hospital facilities, admission, is actually occupied by HIV-related illnesses. And we have also a loss of health workers who are leaving the public sector because they cannot carry on the burden. And that's why actually we are saying, can we form partnership in terms of resources, in terms of intelligence, in terms of research, so that we can actually address it as a team? As a team. We really need assistance. We really need this in terms of money, in terms of skilled health workers, in terms of research. And that would actually improve our education system in general, and not only at the university level.
The message of these scholars to the West is clear.
To go back and adhere to the Millennium Development Goals, there are 8 of them, and 2 of them are very specific. One, the fight against AIDS, malaria, TB. The second one, which is related, is this question of international partnership that she has alluded to, which has implications for training, for double research, and so on. If they can only do that and remove the duplicity that was referred to earlier, then the funds would be released for other more productive purposes.
You've been listening to a conversation with Dr. Shalastika Ipinge and Dr. Barnabas Otala of the University of Namibia. They were in Toronto in September 2005 to work with students of medical anthropology at the University of Toronto, where Professor Richard Lee runs a program called Social and Cultural Aspects of HIV/AIDS. The program has involved over 100 Canadian and Namibian students since 1996 in grassroots research on AIDS treatment and prevention in Namibia. Thanks to our distinguished guests and to Asad Ismi, who conducted this interview.